welcome to the latest edition of the KGNU Boulder Bookstore Book Club. I'm delighted to welcome my co-host every month, Arsene Kashkashian, who is the head buyer of the Boulder Bookstore. And we have a very special guest in studio this morning.
Yeah, we have Bonnie Jo Campbell here with us to discuss her book of short stories, Mothers Tell Your Daughters. And this is the first time we've ventured really out of Colorado for an author. So we're very happy that Bonnie Jo could stop by this morning and talk with us.
And it is our first foray into short stories as well. Why did you select a book of short stories?
Well, I'm very partial to short stories, and it's kind of the one form that falls in between. You know, people often have book groups about novels, and then there's some devoted poets out there who will talk about poets. But it's hard to find conversations really about a full collection of short stories. And so it was something I really wanted to bring to the show. I think Bonnie's book has, they're not connected short stories, but there's certainly themes that run throughout the entire book that I thought would be very interesting to discuss with her and expose to the audience.
Well, we're hoping our listeners have been reading along with us. Mothers Tell Your Daughters, the latest book. It's a collection of short stories by Bonnie Jo Campbell. Welcome to the studio.
Oh, it is a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
All right. So I just want to start with the title, Mothers Tell Your Daughters. And I feel like there's a couple stories that talk about this very directly. There's two in particular. In Tell Yourself and also in the title story, the mothers have so much they want to impart to their daughters, but in actuality, in both those stories, they actually never do tell their daughters. And Tell Yourself, she's really talking to herself about her teenage daughter, which she's very concerned about, as is wearing wild clothes, is worried she's going to get in trouble with men much older than her. And then in the title story, Mothers Tell Your Daughters, the mother's basically on her deathbed with the daughter taking care of her, and they never have the conversation. So I guess, you know, what do you want mothers to tell their daughters, and why do you put these obstacles in the way when there's actually, when they're about to tell them in some ways?
Oh, we writers just like trouble, don't we? Yep. Well, when everything goes smoothly with mothers and daughters, there's, as it often does, I mean, we see so many close relationships between mothers and daughters, and it's so wonderful. And I think especially in this day and age, things do often go very smoothly. But we writers are always looking for trouble and where difficult situations can lead us to maybe insights into the more maybe less dramatic situations we have in our real lives. But I was interested, I mean, the title, some readers might recognize it from versions of the House of the Rising Sun. And it's almost it's a little bit of a cautionary tale. Mothers Tell Your Daughters, meaning you really need to warn young women about the troubles. And in both those stories, in the one title story, Mothers Tell Your Daughters, it is a terribly difficult situation because the poor mother can no longer speak. And so she's lying on her deathbed thinking at her daughter and just hoping her daughter can hear her and lamenting that she didn't tell her daughter all these things. So I guess if it's a cautionary tale, it's telling us, do tell your daughters. You know, it's telling mothers, do share these things. And even if you need to apologize for some of the things you've done as a mother, don't wait.
Yeah, the mother also does kind of want to be absolved in some ways. You know, she wants to in that story. And I thought maybe that's a good story, maybe where we can have you read a little bit, just so the audience can get a sound of your voice and kind of what's at stake in these stories. And so if you could read just this short passage,
great, sure.
I'd really appreciate it. And I think this is, again, the mother on the deathbed. And in this passage, sis is the daughter. So when she says sis, she's referring to the daughter. I don't know if you want to set it up a bit more.
Yeah. Well, she's the mother does have something to apologize for, but she's just she's at a point in her life at the very end where she wants to die and feel okay. So she's been kind of a little bit berating her daughter in her own head as though she's speaking to her, but also calling out to her for forgiveness. So I'll just break in here. you can't possibly understand, sis, can you, with your women's power and women's rights, how I couldn't say, hell no, you can't kiss my daughter. It's strange to imagine them words coming out of my mouth even now. Theroux was the most elegant man I knew. He made your daddy seem like a farmhand, and I loved him as much as I'd ever loved your daddy, and he worked hard tending bar, sometimes 60 hours a week, and he could have gone back to his wife any time, and when you ran off, he did go back to her. You should have had a daughter of your own. That would have been a bone for you to chew on all your life. I guarantee, though, you wouldn't win any award for raising a daughter. Hell, if you had a daughter, she'd probably admire me more than you ever could for my toughness and the way I like to laugh and party, for the way I've never given up, for my knowing how to break horses and grow vegetables and bale hay, and the way I overlook nonsense and small troubles. If you'd had a daughter, you'd be more forgiving of what people do. You think I've failed you, sis. Well, my ma failed me, too. She let herself get locked in the nut house, and you would have failed your own daughter if you had one. That's women's studies. And I might have said her daughter is a women's studies professor.
Yeah, that's just great. You know, what I love about that passage, too, is this woman's on her deathbed, and she does want forgiveness, but she's, in some ways, the characters, many characters in this book, they don't quite give an inch. They are who they are, and they're not going to, you know, they're not going to apologize for being who they are, even if they feel a need to be forgiven for some of the things that may have happened. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And I like that you don't pull punches, really, with these characters. I feel like they really live their lives and you know, they do the best with what they can, and at some point you have to keep going.
Yeah, it's funny in fiction, you know, characters are our tools, and we're trying to figure out in stories how much change can occur. And often when I'm teaching writing and a student has a story that he or she's having difficulty with, I'm always asking, who gets to change? Who gets to have the realization? And that's the person whose story it is. And if characters change too much, we don't believe them. We don't believe in them. And so much of fiction is study of character, and what does it mean to be a certain kind of person?
That's author Bonnie Jo Campbell joining us in the KGNU studio this morning, along with Arsene Kashkashian of the Boulder Bookstore, as we are having another of our monthly book clubs. We hope you've been reading along with us. This month's selection is a selection of short stories, Mothers Tell Your Daughters by Bonnie Jo Campbell. And as we've heard, a theme running throughout all the stories, even though each story is different. And I was excited, Arsene, that you picked short stories. I think that's an underappreciated form of literature. Do you think so, Bonnie Jo? I mean, do you think that we're giving enough appreciation to the short story as a medium?
I know there's such an interesting thing to think about, because we are living in a glorious time of short stories right now. There are incredible collections of stories because so many people are studying writing in writing programs, and these are the projects that new writers can take on that are manageable in the classroom. And so a lot of us are discovering that we're starting out by writing them because it's practical, and then discovering that they do incredible things. They do lie, as Arsene said, between the poem and the novel. And often in short stories, we're willing to suspend disbelief. We're willing to just go into a story and live in that story for one long sitting, however long it might take to enjoy a short story, and come out of that single experience with a piece of literature with something wild. I mean, something intense and even outrageous that we can't quite get from a novel. Many people are hesitant to take on short stories because we've become accustomed to novels and the way that we can live in the novel over an extended period of time. And that's wonderful, too. Novels are where we live with the characters and, you know, we eat and breathe with them, and they become part of our lives. But there's something else in a short story to gather that intensity. And it's often possible to explore maybe more difficult characters in short stories because we're not really living with them for so long.
Yeah, I think one of the things I really like about short stories is you really see authors stretching in short stories, maybe trying characters that they wouldn't have tried in a novel, maybe trying forms that they wouldn't have tried in a longer novel. I mean, I think some of the very best stories, some of the ones we talked about here, I think Tell Yourself, which is really the mother talking mostly in her head to her teenage daughter, that you couldn't keep that intensity going for a novel. I mean, you can get away with that for 10, 15 pages, whatever, and it's great. It's like, wow, it takes off your head. But you couldn't sit there with that for 200 pages. And
yeah, I think most readers agree that let's call it an experimental novel is very difficult to read. Because with novels, we live with them. And I think once we step outside the reading, we start questioning, is that really plausible? Is that really going on? But I think for the duration of that short story, we enjoy being treated differently. In some of these stories, I have used the second person.
Yeah.
So to have a story where someone is basically shouting at you is is something that would become tiresome over a couple hundred pages. But just for that brief moment where we're taken by surprise at this voice, we say, oh, I'm listening. And like in real life, that eccentric character we meet at the cocktail party, we don't want to necessarily marry that guy, but we sure enjoy hearing his story at the party.
Well, one of the things I really loved, and particularly the way you have them in the sequence, and maybe we could talk about that, how you choose the sequence of the stories in the book, the change in tone, because some of them are so deep and so intense and deal with such very hard issues to fathom. And then some of them are laugh out loud, hilarious. Like there's a story about a woman whose wayward fiance she imagines has come back, or who has deceased in, you know, the throes of passion with somebody else. She imagines he's come back as a stray dog, and she has this whole relationship with this dog.
Yeah, I wanted to ask that question too.
It's hilarious. Yeah. And like I said, that's literally laugh out loud funny, coming right after or right before a very deep emotional story. And so, Arsene, maybe you want to pick up that theme of...
Well, yeah, I mean, two of the stories I wanted to ask, that story is My Dog Roscoe, and it's just really hilarious story. But there are deeper things, even in the humor. There's really deeper things running on. I mean, this is one of the few women who actually finds somebody that seems to be a suitable partner and that she's married to, and she's about to have a baby. And yet the stray dog who she's become convinced is her kind of awful former boyfriend who had died, she's tying the bait and kicking out the husband to live with the dog in the middle of the story. And I just thought, you know, how did that idea come to you? And kind of, what Maeve said, the changing of the tone in the book is really interesting.
Yeah, I really love writing humor, and a lot of readers love reading humor, but it's a little bit, I think tragedy is more universal and difficulty is more universal. And so I think often we in the literary establishment are very cautious with how we use humor because it doesn't work for everyone. So, but this story, a lot of people have enjoyed this story, so I felt confident including it. And I mean, we all love dogs, and dogs seem to know things about us that they shouldn't know. And so I had a fabulous three-legged dog myself for 16 years, and he would look at me with such a knowing way. And so I sort of fantasized this situation. And I'm interested in the choices that women make, and often they make the wrong choice, especially early in life, and then they pay for it. And so I'm often showing these women. And so I wanted to show a woman who has an opportunity to make this choice in front of the eyes of the reader, and she does okay in the end. But I also wanted to show how even it's not clear, even in situations where we think women, it should be clear that they make the right choice, often they're tempted by trouble. They're tempted, shall we say, to be led astray by a situation that seems a little sexier than their own life. Or
well, led astray by a stray.
By a stray.
story. One I wanted to ask, which is a change of tone too, was the story Bloodwork. And this character is a phlebotomist.
Yep, yep. She takes
blood. Draws blood at the hospital. And this seems to be one of the few characters, she's almost touched by grace. You know, this she gives to these charitable causes. She seems a little bit of a lost soul herself, but her heart always seems to be in the right place. And that seemed like a real change of tone to the rest of the book.
Well, I wanted to show, my sister is in real life is a good-hearted phlebotomist, so she was my inspiration for this, although the character is not really like her. But I was interested in a character who really, really takes everything to heart and really tries her best to make good decisions and to be kind. And I was also interested in what would happen to a person who felt she had to take to heart every call for help she received in this world, because all of us receive mail asking for help, and we receive entreaties, we hear from people on the street, and it breaks our hearts all the time, but we keep it at a distance. And I was interested in exploring the heart of a young woman who couldn't keep it at a distance, who felt she really did have to help everybody. And so often that can lead to tragedy, but it can lead to comic situations as well. So
but we definitely don't want to give away the ending of that particular story, because it's bizarre, tragic, and kind of comedic a little bit too. So people will have to read that. But the other thing that I really appreciated is the intergenerationality, if that's even a word, of these women. You deal with women who are teenagers at the end of their life, widows, people early on making bad decisions, young, about to be mothers. Was that a conscious thing that you wanted to touch on all aspects of stages, I suppose, in the life of a woman?
Yeah. One thing I can say is that I write about situations that worry me in real life. And so I'm kind of in the middle of my, I'm 53. So I'm kind of in the middle. So I'm very aware of difficult situations of my mother's generation. I mean, that was a generation where women especially in a rural setting, women just had to be so strong and so tough, and often they did it at the expense of being kind, you know. And then I'm very interested in I have a lot of nieces in my family, and I worry about them endlessly. So I'm always imagining situations of having these different age groups interacting, and we all need to help each other, and we're not always set up to give each other all the right advice, even though we might try. And so I was really interested in hearing the voices, and I'm especially interested in presenting the voices that we have not been hearing in literature, on television. We just don't hear from poor rural women enough. And I would say that a lot of these women who are in poverty, and people in my family are included in this, they're raising the next generation. They are working endless hours. They're working and toiling, and we're not hearing from them because they're really busy. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to give voice to them, and also to the older women who in some ways have helped the next generation, and in some ways have failed the next generation. So I'm just interested in hearing how they speak to one another at this time, at the time as their death approaches, and also for the young women as they're raising children.
Yeah, the lives of some of the women are really hard, really tough. And, you know, when I was reading this book over the past week or so, I was also reading The New Yorker, and The New Yorker had a big article on Gloria Steinem. And she talks about how she's trying to hear the stories of women all over the world. And part of it talked about her first trip to Alaska, where she talked to Native women about their really tough things. And one of the things she said in that article struck me as I was reading some of your stories. And she said, and because in your stories, there's a lot of abuse, both physical and mental, that the women are subjected to at the hands of the men. There's also a couple rapes in the story. You really address violence on women in a very profound way, I think, in this book.
Oh, okay.
But Gloria Steinem said in this recent New Yorker, violence in any patriarchy begins at home in the family. And I thought, boy, you're showing that from the ground up in some ways in this book. You know.
Yeah, and I didn't want to show it ever as a clear-cut criminal situation. I'm really interested in the more insidious gray areas where where the I guess where these difficulties are given birth to in domestic situations are often at the root of the other problems. I can't wait to read that article now. So I'm interested in the situations where, for example, we've heard about these stories in the news where a young woman was at a party and thought maybe she drank too much or thought she'd had a good time, and then the next day was made aware of a sexual violation. And to me, that's the worst, to not know, to not even realize. And so there's one story that explores that. But there's other situations where, and I don't mean to make men the bad guys in any of my stories. I feel the men are often the more sympathetic characters in my story, but that doesn't mean that always their behavior is perfect.
Yeah, well, that's one of the hard things. You know, in Playhouse, which is the story you were kind of referring to, where the woman finds out what happened to her later, but she appeals to her brother, and he doesn't quite know what to make of it, and he's raising a small child on his own. His wife has left him, but she finally turns to him and says, "You should have protected me." But it's almost a foreign idea to him. It's not that he's necessarily a bad guy, but the thought of protecting her in that way just almost doesn't occur to him.
Yeah, because what he saw is his sister with too much to drink, having fun with some guys. And to him, it didn't seem like a violation. And I hope I can show how that he was, because he wasn't looking for trouble, he wasn't keyed into it. He just doesn't see the problem. And maybe for a lot of us, we're just not seeing the problem. We're not seeing the problem that's causing her. And she doesn't even understand why she feels so bad. She needs to explore that situation. So, I mean, I think in this life, we're men and women, we're all in it together, you know, and sometimes it's easy to make pit us against one another, that men are doing bad things to women and women are victims. But I think we're learning more, even in bullying situations, that the bullies are hurt just as much as the victims, and that we need to work this. We need to work through this together, and we need to, you know, and I'm not a sociologist, but, you know, when I put on that sociology cap, you know, I just want to say we need to share these experiences, and we need everybody to not condemn one another, but to explore these difficult gray areas. And men and women have to do it together.
That's Bonnie Jo Campbell joining us in our KGNU studio this morning. I'm Maeve Conran, along with my co-host Arsene Kashkashian, as we are bringing you another edition of the KGNU Boulder Bookstore Book Club. And we're delighted to have been reading this collection of short stories, Mothers Tell Your Daughters. It's our November pick, and it's by author Bonnie Jo Campbell, who we are thrilled to be able to have in the studio. Arsene, I think this is the first time we have a non-Colorado-based author. And so it's great to have availed of your schedule, Bonnie Jo, to have you here.
Oh, well, it's so great to come all the way from Michigan to come and see some beauty, a particular kind of beauty we don't have in Michigan.
Well, the last story, I was really pleased that it ended on an uplifting note, because we had talked a little bit about the change in tone. Some stories are very dark, multi-layered and very complex, as is life. And that's, I think, one of the things I appreciate so much. We're often trying to impose a very black and white narrative on all situations. It's good, it's bad, you're wrong, you're right. This shows the complexities of all kinds of everything in all kinds of characters. But the last story does end on an uplifting note, which I personally was pleased by. Was that something that you consciously did?
Yeah, I did. I know there's some difficult stories in the collection. And so I have some of the stories that are... a little lighter in tone. I wanted them to work as kind of palate cleansers in the middle of some of the other stories. And then I wanted to just show that there are ways that women who have difficulties, and even a woman who, like Susanna of the final story, who has sworn off love and who has felt that this wasn't something that was ever going to happen to her again, might have her mind opened by circumstance, if she's just willing to let in a little possibility.
And it really ticks all the boxes, finding love after you've given up later in life. An older woman who is never written in a romantic capacity in popular culture, really. And a good guy who seems like a genuine good guy. So that was a nice tone to end
Definitely.
On.
I thought it was a great, great story to end. That story is called The Fruit of the Pawpaw Tree. We haven't mentioned the title, but... Yeah, and she and I can't remember the exact wording, but he says to her, the man says to her, this is what she says, you're a woman who knows exactly what she wants or does exactly what she's going to want to do, which is different than we've seen all these other women struggling and trying to say things they can't say and doing things that they shouldn't do. And this is finally somebody who's got her head screwed on right.
And she's a little older than a lot of the characters, and she doesn't even realize she is that kind of woman. That was important to me. The change in that story is that by having it pointed out to her who she really is, I think a lot of the women box themselves in and they don't realize their full potential, not only for doing good in the world, but for finding happiness. And so for a character like this to have, you know, a little elbow in the ribs to say, come on, lighten up and let's have fun. And then she finds that she does have that capacity as well, she's had, you know, had to raise kids and be tough. But it turns out at this time, maybe she doesn't have to always choose the rough road. You know, maybe she can take comfort when it's offered.
Well, Bonnie Jo Campbell's latest book is a collection of short stories, Mothers Tell Your Daughters. We're delighted to have had that as our pick for this month in the Boulder Bookstore, KGNU Radio Book Club. And now, our big reveal, our next choice, Arson, is going to be broadcast on December 3rd, and it is author Hampton Sides. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this?
Well, we're going to mix it up a little bit. We're going to go to a nonfiction book for the first time in about 6 months, and it's Hampton Sides, and he wrote a book called In the Kingdom of Ice, The Grand and Terrible Polar Voyage of the USS Jeannette. And this is a story of an 1879 trip to the North Pole. And I won't give away too much, but I will say that not surprisingly, the ship gets trapped in the ice. And so it's a rollicking adventure story. Hampton Sides is a great writer. I read Hellhound on His Trail, which was a totally different book by him about the Martin Luther King assassination. And it was just riveting, you know, you type of thing you just can't put down. So I think we'll have great fun with this one.
So do tune in for that. That's going to be Thursday, December 3rd, a conversation with Hampton Sides in the studio. Don't forget, you can find all of our book club archives. Listen again, find out more about all of the books and find out more information about Bonnie Jo Campbell's Mothers Tell Your Daughters. It's at news.kgnu.org. Look for the book club logo. Well, Bonnie Jo, it's been great to have you in. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
And Arson, it's always great to have you in the studio.
Oh, it's great. And thank you so much for being here, Bonnie Jo.